Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. Well, welcome. It's so nice to see everybody. Really nice. You know, this is it's not the same as being together in a in person, but you know, it'll do. And it has additional benefits. I think I see some people who I wouldn't probably see at the Zendo. We have a good number of people here. So, as if I were at the Zendo, we were at the Zendo, I just want to say hello to each of you very briefly. Rachel, Karen, nice to see you. Elizabeth, Cynthia, Val, I don't believe we've met. I'm going to unmute you for just a moment. You know, you don't have an anonymity here, unlike a chat room. Where are you from? Are you on Vashon? Have you come to the Zen Center?
Uh-huh. I've been to one of your introductions.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, if I could see you better, I might recognize you. Welcome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Leslie, great to see you. Maggie, I can't see you, but I'm unmuting you. Do I know you, Maggie? Okay, if I don't hear from you, I'm assume your audio is not working. Okay, you're back to mute. Susan, great to see you. Jim and Joyce, Wes, Kathleen, and is that Gail? Yeah, all right. All right, John and Jean, howdy. Judy, great to see you. Janelle from West Seattle, great to see you, Janelle. Say hi to the group.
Hi, group.
Great. Welcome. Look at that. Kathleen, I'm going to unmute you guys. Hi, Fritz, good to see you. Lee Doon, you seem so close. She is so close. She's right nearby here. Stephen, great to see you again. Stephen Ice. Oh, I can't hear you. Maybe your audio is not working, but it is great to see you. It's been a while. Josh, great to see you. Garrett, hello there. In your, is that it? Oh, I just messed up. There's Garrett. Yeah, is that your new house, Garrett?
Yep.
Okay, congratulations. Linda, Jerry Joe, great to see you. I think I just unmuted you. Can't hear you, Jerry Joe, but it's great to see you. And Barbara and David and Elizabeth. Okay. All right. I'm going to mute all now and get to going here. I want to say something today about Zazen. One of the reasons I wanted to talk about that today is because we have this intensive practice period coming up. I hope all of you really are going to do it. That is to say, starting next Sunday, commit to doing more practice. And breaking news, starting this week, I am sure I am going to be here at 6:30 a.m. from 6:30 to 7:30 every morning, so feel free to join. During the practice period, I'm going to see whether we can get more evenings together just for an hour, for instance. So I'm hoping we can sit by ourselves and also sit as a group. Zazen, of course, is our fundamental practice in Zen. In Japanese, the za means to sit, and the zen means Zen. And Zen, of course, comes from jhana, the Sanskrit word jhana, which means meditation or contemplation. Zen is the way of meditation. So, and zazen means seated meditation. And of course, we do a lot of it in Zen. And I hope you can see your way to doing a lot of it this next week. Today I want to talk about the practice of Zazen. Some weeks after I arrived at Mount Baldy Zen Center, those many years ago, maybe 30 years ago now, I was really struck by the fact that we were told in great detail how to enter the Zendo, how to eat, how to bow, how to walk, what to do with our bodies when we do Zazen, how and when to do just about everything. But I really felt that somebody forgot to tell me what to do with my mind. That really was left up to me. No one told me how to get quiet. No one gave me instructions about that. I did go to see the teacher, the Roshi, usually multiple times a day, two or four times a day. But he wasn't telling me either. Really, he was roughly speaking, waving a finger in the sky. I mean, pointing up there and saying, "Oh, the full moon is so beautiful. Just find it." That seemed to be his primary instruction about Zazen. So, pointing toward the goal, inspiring you to find the goal of a quiet mind, but lacking in specificity. Later, I put that down to encouraging resourcefulness. I felt it encouraged resourcefulness in me, and I still think that, roughly speaking. I think if you find your own way down to quiet in different life situations, assuming you're doing Zazen over time, when you have different moods, when you're in different physical situations, you may be in pain or free from pain, while you're doing different activities, while you're walking, while you're working, while you're resting, if you find your own way, then your own way to quiet, then I think in a different way you can trust yourself to find it. You can trust yourself to find it again. You can trust yourself to find it in different circumstances. And over time, I think you'll have a greater trust in that aspect of yourself, that it really is an aspect of yourself all of the time, no matter whether how you're feeling. That aspect that doesn't have to plan or worry or want for anything is truly a part of your nature, is truly the deepest part of your nature. We call that aspect in Zen no self. And getting to know no self, the no self aspect of yourself, getting to know no self is, I would say, the primary usefulness, use of Zazen. But there's another thing you'll get to know better if you do Zazen, and that is yourself. And in particular, if you don't have a list of bullet points as to how to get quiet, you're bound to bump around some within yourself. Find your own way to quiet. And in that way, I think you'll discover more of yourself. If you have a step-by-step guide, it's more possible to avoid some of those places within yourself. So the path isn't just about finding no self, it's also about discovering yourself too in a new way. And rather than have a narrow way down to no self, I think it can help to, it's better to have a wide path to be able to follow many paths down, and really to be able to explore on your own mental terrain, and to get to know it. So that's my basic feeling about Zazen, is it's good if the front foot is on you discovering it, discovering the way, your way around Zazen. However, I think that the work of getting calm and steady, finding that Buddha nature, I think sometimes that in Zen we don't give enough help, enough instruction. You know, I think it's one thing to tell monks in a monastery, just keep at it. You'll find the moon if you keep at it. But it's another, they're stuck there, you know. It's another to do that with ourselves in our busy lay lives. So today I want to concentrate, shine a light a little bit on Zazen. It does seem to me like I talk about Zazen all the time, usually relative to other things. But today I just want to talk about Zazen per se. And the first thing I want to do is to encourage you, maybe in the spirit of this resourcefulness, to experiment with different ways of working with your mind, of concentrating it, and of finding your way to no self. So different Zen teachers do things differently because of the way I was raised. I feel that there is no one way to do it. And, you know, before the internet existed, I got lots of helpful tips from fellow practitioners and Osho's, senior monks at Mount Baldy. This past Christmas, I gave Headspace to my nephew, and we listened to the first 10 days of instruction together while he was here, and I enjoyed it very much. And last month, somebody gave me a 70-page, I printed it out, 70 pages of instruction, meditation instruction from Shinzen Young. Some of you may know him. He's a Vipassana teacher. He and I studied together at Mount Baldy for many years, did Zazen there. And then last week, Garrett gave me a month free of Sam Harris's Waking Up app, which I'm also enjoying. So this is just to say, I'm learning too. I'm learning, continue to learn how to do this practice and how to explain it. And I hope you do too. All right, Zazen. There are different ways to categorize the basic elements of Zazen. This is the way I do it. I generally think about the aspects of Zazen as the body and the environment and your thoughts and feelings. That's usually the way I do it for myself. Now, the body is divided into two building blocks, posture and breathing. When my teacher was asked, what's the one most important thing about Zen coming to the West, he said posture and breathing. And compared to some other paths, we do concentrate. We put some energy into what to do with the body, how to hold your body in a way that allows it to be calm and alert. In the Zen school, we really believe in the importance and I think the power of posture, of getting your posture right. And I'd go as far as to say, I think it, learning to open up your posture and to sit up straight and to stand up straight affects the very posture that you have toward your life, toward things that come into your life and toward your life in general. So sit up, and when you walk through the world, walk with an open posture if you can. I think it makes a difference. I think it makes a difference in the way that we face the challenges of our life. I think we can do it in a more open and accepting way. Just as we meet the physical and psychic challenges that we face in Zazen itself, helps with an open posture. When you're sitting, in order to sit up and alert, we suggest you start with a firm base, a good base. If you're sitting on a cushion or on the floor, to sit with your knees and your bottom on the cushion if possible. If you're sitting in a chair, with your bottom and your feet. And then your torso can grow naturally from that. Your breath, pay attention to your breath as you sit. I think it's the best place to start after you sit down. Remember your breathing. Breathe in a natural way, I was taught. And naturally it will deepen and lengthen if you simply pay attention to it. Try paying close attention to your breath. Right now, try paying close attention to the next in-breath, start to finish. And to the next out-breath, start to finish. Just by paying attention to your breath changes. It will naturally deepen and lengthen. I think the breath is something special, almost magical. I think it has kind of healing powers. And it definitely has calming powers. And we know that paying attention to your breathing in a calm way, activates your parasympathetic nervous system, which tells your body and your mind that it's okay, that you're not being chased by a lion, that you can relax. So I was taught to follow my breath, not to force it, but to allow it to deepen and lengthen naturally. And do pay attention to to your breath, if you feel it's shallow, I just said allow it to deepen naturally, but if you feel that it's shallow, try lengthening it just a little bit. Try relaxing into it. A classic thing to do with your breath, excuse me, a classic thing to do with your breath is to count it. and again, classically, you take an in-breath and then speak to yourself one on the out-breath up to 10 and then back to one. Again, counting on the out-breath. And that helps you calm down. It also helps with concentration. All right. While I clear my throat, Wes, I'm going to put you on the spot. Let's see if I can unmute you. Yep. you've done a lot more breath counting than I have, I think. I was not taught to count my breath when I first came to Mount Baldy Zen Center. I only started it later, years later. And now I go to it once in a while, especially when I'm feeling, when I feel I need it. when I'm feeling particularly busy. Would you mind saying just two or three minutes about your experience with counting breath? You've been doing it for a long time.
Sure. All the teachers I've had have emphasized breathing and posture, both those things. In terms of counting one's breath, the good part about counting one's breath is that you don't deceive yourself. You can't deceive yourself into thinking you're really concentrating, because when you're saying 7, 7, 7, you know you missed it. It's also a good discipline not to blame yourself and not to beat yourself up. You know, this tendency for us to say, oh, you know, I'm doing this so badly. Don't do that. Just go back and 1, 2. One thing that all the teachers I've had have emphasized is breathing from your tanden, about 3-4 inches below your belly button. Feel that's where your seat of energy is. So not to be breathing up here, feeling up the breath in your lungs, but rather feeling it down and keeping that attention down. So you're breathing from really the bottom of your belly. And as Koshin says, when you pay attention to your breath, it naturally tends to lengthen. When you're concentrating, you know, we all know that when you're even sitting at a computer and concentrating, you tend to sit up straight. And when you sit up straight, it helps your concentration. That's why posture is so important in Zazen. But the same thing is true, I think, of breath. When we're concentrating well, our breath tends to lengthen, and we can help that along by purposely lengthening our breath a little bit. Don't force it, as Koshin says, but just breathe. And it can be much longer than that.
Okay.
Sure, Roshi can do it. You can listen to him do it, and he'll do a minute on just the one. I think everyone has to find his or her own way in terms of, as you say, how to do Zazen. And it changes with time. It changes with the circumstances. At Zazen, it's different from sitting in the morning or sitting in the evening.
Certainly. Thanks, Wes. I appreciate that. Wes brings up a point, which is just that this balance between effort and no effort. I'll mention that in just a moment in a broader sense, but both with the breath and with other matters in Zen, to feel, I think it's important to allow things to happen, and at the same time, when you feel you need it, to give them some effort, just like you mentioned, it may help to pay a little bit of attention to lengthening your breath at the right time. Though I don't suggest you put the front foot on that. The same thing with your belly, belly breathing. I was taught that it's generally good to breathe from your belly. The way I work with that is just to imagine my tummy expanding. Well, it does expand, feeling it expand when I breathe in and contract when I breathe out. And that's enough for me to have concentration on my belly, to kind of bring some attention to that region of my body. Okay, that's one more thing about the body itself, and that is I recommend you notice what it feels like to be in a body. Notice your bottom against the seat. Notice your feet. When you're doing walk-in meditation, notice your feet, your hands, the feeling of the air. Really try to inhabit your body. And there are some in Vipassana, for instance, they do a body sweep. I haven't had much experience of that, but the couple of times I've done it, it's been very nice. For me, it's more about feeling what I'm feeling, having the sensation of touch in my body. Breath is a sensation of touch. My hands together is a sensation of touch. What's it like to be in a body? Okay, moving. Oh, and then one last thing about that is pain. I'll just say a quick word about pain. When you feel pain in your body, it's key to accept that it's there. Accept that it exists, that it has a right to exist. And when you do that, then you can slowly adjust your posture. And I always do it together with my breath when I'm moving my posture to get more comfortable. So that's the body. The environment. The environment of the, which is to say the awareness of what is going on outside of you. I think the first thing to say about this is that the environment is not actually happening outside of you. If you notice carefully, everything comes to you. Everything happens here in your body. When you hear a bird, the bird is chirping in your body. And with sound in particular, that sometimes it's called tracing back or turning your lamp around, noticing what happens in your body. That has really helped me. So I make it a practice not to chase sounds, to chase them out in the environment with my mind, but to let them come to me and to notice them here. You know, not just in my ear, really. For me, it's in my torso, to really listen with my body. And the next step is to see if you can not jump when you hear a sound, for instance, into making a mental object of that sound, or naming it, you know, like a bird or the hum of a computer, just to let that sound be and to discover it, to explore it in a certain way without naming it. And I think that's a good step in Zen, to be able to do that, to play with it. I think we have a subtle desire to name, to categorize, that doesn't appear until we try not to do it. So sounds have been a very helpful Dharma gate for me. Sight, I want to mention that. In the Zen tradition, we tend to sit with our eyes open. I think if you're used to sitting with your eyes closed, you can go ahead and do that. But I do recommend that you at least experiment with having your eyes open. In the Zen school, it's usually something like half open. And sometimes for me, if I'm feeling particularly busy, again, I'll just open them a tiny bit, just an eighth of an opening, so that I just have let a little bit of the world in. But for me, that is helpful. The sight is known as the king of the senses, and it really forms the world, forms things into forms and names in a way that nothing else does. And over the years, I've experimented a lot with sight, with loosening sight, loosening the grip that sight has on my mind. So see if you can't loosen that. You might start by just loosening the muscles around your eyes when you sit, and loosening your gaze, so that you might be looking, as I do, at a particular region of the floor, but relaxing enough to take in the whole room. I think it's harder to sit with your eyes open at first, for many at least, but I think it's very good to work at, because when we go out in the world, when we're bringing Zen into life, we of course have our eyes open. And so to be able to meditate with our eyes open, I think makes a quiet state closer to our everyday life. All right, a little bit about thoughts and emotions next. Now these, like the environment, happen in our body, of course. I mean, I called them, you know, I mentioned our mind, but they happen in our body. And how do we work with them? Well, I think the general instruction on something like this is good. Don't fight them. First, notice that you're thinking. Like Wes said, when you're counting your breath, just notice that you've lost track. And calmly and without a lot of drama or judgment, just come back to your breath, to your local environment. Come back to this room, rather than running off into the past or the future. And by doing that over and over again, we settle down. And those thoughts tend to loosen. And I think we can help them settle by keeping coming back to our breath and to our body and to our environment over and over again. Sometimes I think of that as sweeping. When I was a monk, I did a lot of sweeping and raking. The Mount Baldy is kind of doesn't have any grass or any. It's called regolith. It's just rocks and kind of gravelly sand everywhere. It's kind of a harsh environment. I remember Lidun's mother feeling that when she came to visit. Before every Saturday, we would rake the long road from the parking lot all the way past one end of camp to the other end of camp. I think it's more than half a mile. And I did a lot of that raking. We weren't raking anything up. We weren't trying to get rid of anything. We were just raking, making a nice pattern on the, on the path, a little bit like a sand garden. So just back and forth and back and forth. And that's a little bit like my practice when I'm sitting. Just back and forth, back and forth. Noticing the breath, having the breath go back and forth, back and forth. And sometimes it helps me to have a visual like that. Another one from Shunro Suzuki is that we just read in our Wednesday class that I used early on. He says, yeah, when we practice Zazen, our mind always follows our breathing. When we inhale, the air comes into the inner world. When we exhale, the air goes out to the outer world. The inner world is limitless, and the outer world is also limitless. We say inner world and outer world, but actually there is just one whole world. In this limitless world, our throat is like a swinging door. The air comes in and goes out like someone passing through a swinging door. If you think, I breathe, the I is extra. There is no you to say I. We just call I, what we call I is just a swinging door which moves as we inhale and when we exhale. Sometimes things like that can help, I think. Help us settle deeper and deeper. Sometimes an image, of course, doesn't help. I remember one, when I was in my early 20s, before I discovered Mount Baldy, I went across the country in my Mercury Monarch, sleeping in the back of it, and I stayed with these two Mississippian ladies, and they were ladies. They had, I met one of them at the Cottonlandia Museum, and she asked where I was staying. I said I was sleeping in my car. She said, oh no, that won't do. You have to come stay with us. Anyway, I told her I was interested in meditation. She said, oh yeah, I tried meditation. She said, the guy told me to imagine that I was painting a billboard white, just painting the whole thing stroke by stroke white. And she said, all I could think about was, I hope that guy doesn't fall off the ladder. So sometimes, of course, images like that work, and sometimes they don't. Counting your breath is another one of these things that I think allow us to concentrate and to settle. We also might use a word. Sometimes I did this when I had a koan. I would simply use a word from the koan to settle me and to give myself a little bit of direction. One, as many of you know, I have a Zen teachers group that I meet with every other month in Seattle. And we just talked about Zazen. I brought it up. Just what instruction these guys give. And Anita Feng, some of you know her, she said early instruction for... Here's some early instruction that she gives students. I tried it, and, you know, it's nice. She says, on an in-breath, and I think she got this from her teacher, Sun Sansanim, on an in-breath, just say, clear mind, clear mind, clear mind. And on an out-breath, don't know, don't know, don't know. So on an in-breath, clear mind. On an out-breath, don't know. That gives you some something to begin to settle yourself down. Any of these, whether it's that or counting your breath, eventually I recommend you simply follow your breath, and eventually after that, just to be, whether your breath comes to you or the environment or some bodily sensation. But these things can lead us toward a quieter mind. Then sometimes, of course, we run into larger impediments, some difficult problem that we have, something that's coming up that we just can't solve, some mistake we've made. And it sometimes these things just crowd out everything else, and we feel we have to deal with that, even if it's sitting time. Sometimes, well, Pema Chodron has a very nice quote. I've lost it now. Maybe somebody else can help me find it. I think it's in The Places That Scare Us, at the beginning of one of her chapters. She quotes a female master of old saying, "In other traditions, demons are cast out, but in ours, they're accepted with compassion." How to work with demons, how to work with things that come and grab you and won't let you go, is part of Zazen practice. And you know, you go back to your breathing, you go back to your posture, you go back to those things that have worked, but you've got this demon grabbing you. You've got this problem grabbing you, and you have to learn to be resourceful in a different way. Sometimes those things work, and sometimes they don't. So then you have to move to something else. When I first became a monk, when I decided to become a monk, I needed to tell my parents before a sesshin, right before a sesshin, that I had decided to become a monk and that I had asked for ordination. My parents are good, liberal Christians, Presbyterians, and my mother has always loved me no matter what. Going to Mount Baldy was just fine with them, I think, as an experiment. But when I told them that I was going to get ordained, my mother just exploded. And it was a step too far for her. She just let me have it all over the phone. Oh my gosh. Then I went right into Sesshin. And I had this difficulty that I had to sit with, this problem that felt deep and difficult. And my normal way of working with my mind was not working. So I discovered a method that I have used many times since, and I call it weaving. I could not get rid of that bad feeling, that worrisome feeling about my relationship with my mother. But what I could do was weave in my breath to that, not pushing it away, not even imagining that it's ever going to go away, just weaving the breath into it. So as if this problem was the warp and the breath was the weave. That changed my relationship with that problem. And I realized I can hold that problem in a similar way that I hold a koan. I can hold that problem and I can breathe and I can loosen and I can be more calm. So that's the way we work with those impediments. I have other tricks. Now I feel like I'm going on too long as it is. But the way we work with sort of everyday sweeping and the way we work with larger impediments that come up is definitely part of Zazen, and it's a way in which we work with ourselves and get to know ourselves. Okay, I wanted to just touch on one or two last things here. The One is the question of effort and no effort. How to make effort in Zazen. Effort is one of the six paramitas. It's also one of the steps on the Eightfold Path. We have to use effort somehow, but it's also possible to make wrong effort, to try too hard, to try to banish things that don't want to be banished, to demonize things that in a way that is unhelpful, to do too much striving. And I think it's also possible to do too little effort, to sit there like a bump on a log and not notice your breath and just follow your thoughts wherever they go. To find the balance between effort and no effort is part of Zazen. And I've often said, when sitting, even just sitting down for 25 minutes, to feel, it can take some effort to concentrate your mind at first, but then see if you can find a kind of gravity as we get quieter that pulls you toward it, toward your goal of a calm mind. It's almost as if this no-self aspect of yourself wants to be discovered, has a kind of gravity that pulls you toward it. I believe that to be true. And maybe I'll stop with this now. But I think also it really helps to keep at it and to try and to keep motivated as we do this practice. Sitting can be boring at times. It can be, we can go through lulls in our practice. It's one of the reasons that it really helps, I think, to sit with others, to keep us going. And me as a teacher, I feel like I am some part coach, like I'm doing now, talking about Zazen, and some part just cheerleader. You can do it, just keep going. That's a part of my job too. Yay. So I guess that's maybe a good place to stop. Just keep going with Zazen. Keep working at it. Keep, try different things. And in that way, discover yourself and discover a new aspect of yourself. Yourself that doesn't need to think, that doesn't need to worry, that can just be calm. Oh gosh, that seemed to go on forever here by myself in this little room. Let's try this. If you have a question or a comment, just unmute yourself and say something. Let's see if we can do it that way.
So I have a question about the upcoming mornings where you're going to be doing the online sitting.
Yeah.
Do you feel okay about people if we're not here right at 6:30, but want to come at 7, is that okay?
Oh, we've had people come and go throughout, I think. And I feel okay about it, yeah. Yeah, I feel quite okay about it.
I'm excited that it's happening with this practice period coming up, because I think it'll be a nice addition to that.
Me too. I was very aware that there's no way we can rent or work it out with Hatvara to get, a lot more sitting in because of our contract. But this is a way to do it. Thank you.
Cool.
Yeah. Barbara, do you have something to say, or are you just making noise?
Can you see me, Koshin?
I cannot see you, but I can hear you if you have a question or a comment.
Well, I could see Linda.
Well, just because you could see Linda doesn't mean Linda can see you.
Okay, well, my comment is I like this very much.
Okay.
And I think it's It's going to be wonderful. And also for people who are housebound for one reason or another, how perfect is that? So thank you, Koshin.
Yeah, absolutely. Other thoughts? Kathleen? Oh, you're giving a thumbs up? Okay, good. Well, we are going to continue it for sure. Wes, do you want to say something? You unmuted yourself?
Just one sort of obvious thing, but I continually miss it myself, and that is when you sit down to do Zazen, you can make a real effort to just get the first three breaths. Right, because there's a sense of, okay, now I'm here, and and it just goes on and on and on. And sometimes it takes 20 minutes before you suddenly realize, oh, I'm supposed to be paying attention. So if you can just start with the intention to pay attention, it makes a big difference.
Get a good start. I think that's very true. Yep. Thank you, Wes.
Okay.
Yeah, Elizabeth?
This is a logistics thing. So Monday night, we're going to have this online, which is very nice. How do we go about organizing it? Will we need a different Zoom number?
No, you just use the same link over and over again.
Okay, and so Wes would be the...
Let's talk about that offline. It'll be just fine. It'll all work out. I'll be right here every single time in my little room. Until we can figure out how to move it around.
Okay, thanks.
So, yeah, you're stuck with me.
No problem.
I wanted to share an observation I noticed. Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, about doing Zazen here with a computer in front of me. Probably many of you also work a lot with your computers, and it's, you know, it's this like love-hate relationship where it's so often a device of distraction because there's that portal onto the internet there. And so I noticed a couple times this like urge to check my email as I'm sitting here. And so I also am thinking, wow, this could be a really great opportunity to help train my mind to be a lot more intentional and think about being those, the tendency arise in my mind to go and seek information when I'm using this thing. So,
very nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a speaker 3 years ago maybe now who gave a talk about mindful tech. And the only thing I remember, I have his book, I didn't read the book, but the only thing I remember from it was when you are using technology, when you are in front of your computer, don't be a brain on a stick. Notice that you have a body. Notice that your hand is touching a mouse. that you know, almost like we do in Zazen, that you are sitting in a chair. Notice your posture. So helpful. It was so helpful for about a month, and then it ceased being helpful anymore because I forgot all about it. But now, thank you, Judy. I'll try to get back to that. Kathleen or Gail, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I both do actually. I'll let Gail go first.
Okay. So this helps be with my plan for the intensive. And my question is, are the new preceptors available as support people for that effort?
Yes, I think they are. I'm not sure how anything is working right now in terms of the intensive, but you can feel free, for instance, the preceptor that you got in touch with, you can feel free to get back in touch with that person. Is that your...
I didn't get in touch with anyone yet.
Oh, yeah. Well, you should do that to go over your plan.
You get their numbers.
Yeah, those are online somewhere. I can't tell you where. And I don't know, maybe... Oh, Susan's not here. Anyhow, I'll get with you about that, Gail.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. And the other thing that I'll mention right now is that I'm going to offer Dokusan. I'm going to figure it out, probably with a doodle scheduling thing, so that we can anybody who'd like to have a 10 or 15 minute exchange about their practice can sign up for that during the practice period. I'm working on that. Kathy?
Yeah,
Yeah, I had a question from your talk, because I feel like when I have busy mind, which is a lot of the time, I do different things within the 25 minutes. Like I might count, or I might be aware of my breath, or I might think peace or happy. And I'm wondering if I should try to stick with one within that, or if it doesn't really make any difference. I'm just interested in your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it's good to try to stick with something for a decent amount of time. So,
yeah.
For instance, I really think it's good to try to stick with something for a whole sit, if you can, so that you're not jumping around. At the same time, so at least once, try that. And then, speaking of jumping around, now you're jumping around on my computer. There you are. And then we can, as we get more used to doing something for a longer period of time, then we can sometimes use it for a shorter period of time. I hope that helps. But in general, I think it's a good idea to try to try things for a longer period of time if you can.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. All right, guys. Folks are starting to go, and it's past 12 now. Guys, thank you so much for... I'm going to unmute everybody. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.